listeners, and welcome to Garden Planet. You're with Karen and Selena this afternoon, and we have an interesting topic for you.
Today we're going to be talking about weed busting.
Yes, weeds and weeding. And I thought we'd start off with a definition of what a weed is. According to Wikipedia, a weed is a wild plant growing where it is not wanted and in competition with cultivated plants.
Sounds pretty good to me.
And a informal British definition is contemptibly feeble person. So you may have heard someone saying, oh, you're such a weed.
Yes.
So in other words, I don't know, like maybe the runt of the litter type.
Weedy, skinny.
Analogy there.
Lanky.
I used to call it quite a bit.
That's no good, Karen.
And then, I know, but you know what? Weeds are powerful in their own right. That's why they're there in the first place. They don't need cultivating. Yes. And then, of course, there's the verb to remove unwanted plants from an area of ground to weed, or to remove an inferior or unwanted component of a group. So you might say, we need to weed these people out of the organisation.
Well, I use it to weed the library, which means remove old unwanted books.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
There you go. So, interestingly, you will often find these unwanted plants in human-controlled settings, such as farms and gardens and lawns, although maybe not so much my garden. I tend to appreciate them a little bit more. But taxonomically, the term weed actually has no botanical significance, because in one context where one species of a plant is deemed a valuable plant, another species in the same genus may be deemed a serious weed. So it's actually not taxonomically a thing.
Is the weed in the eye of the beholder?
Exactly. Exactly what my point. I couldn't have put it any better, Selena. So, now why on earth, would you ask, would a plant be considered undesirable or unwanted?
It's not in the right place where you want it, or you didn't plant it.
Yeah, well, there's several reasons, especially in the world of agriculture where we're needing mass production. Weeds compete with productive crops or pasture, and so they take, also they can be poisonous, and also they can take nutrients and things like that from the soil, so they're seen as a competitor.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, so that's the reasons why we don't want them interfering with the desirable plants, because they can contaminate harvests and even interfere with livestock.
Okay.
So that's coming from like a
commercial perspective.
Totally. Onions are actually considered one of the most vulnerable crops, interestingly.
Why is that?
Because they're slow to germinate and produce slender upright stems. And so in that time, because they're slow to germinate, the weeds can end up taking over the crop quite easily.
Okay.
And because they're like slender,
they so don't
obviously
cover the ground.
The bowl with the garden's in the ground, and then they've got the little slender little shoots coming up. The weeds, so one study found that, so once the competition had started, the final yield of onion bulbs was reduced at almost 4% per day.
Okay.
This is, again, commercially speaking, and that's quite a significant loss when you think of it like that. So, you know, it gives you a bit of an understanding as to why people throw
heaps of herbicides
at their crops, because they can cost business if you're in that business.
Okay.
Yeah, and they can also even host pests and diseases that can spread onto cultivated crops as well. For instance, the cucumber mosaic virus, which can devastate the cucurbit family, and that's carried by weeds like chickweed and groundsel. I don't know what groundsel. Do you know what groundsel
is? It's kind of a creeping weed plant. It's just quite a common one, but yeah.
So it's weird how like these insect pests don't often attack weeds. They seem to prefer the crop plants, you know.
Yeah,
but then maybe they're just cool because a lot of weeds aren't yummy. So
no, they're quite not bitter.
So same thing. We wouldn't really like harvest a crop of, let's say, I don't know. Some people see. I mean, I watched an ad on TV the other day where they sprayed a beautiful little dandelion growing in the crack of the concrete, and I was like, oh,
you could eat that.
What are you doing? But dandelion is bitter, It's not something I want to grow crops and crops of, but I know people do.
It's because you need to harvest them at the right time, apparently.
Oh.
Otherwise, they can be bitter, but if you get the fresh shoots, they're actually not that bitter. I think people have kind of assumed that they just don't taste very nice, but they've just been harvesting them at the wrong time, or they've accessed leaves that have been sprayed with other things. So, yeah, I wouldn't write off dandelions.
No. But, I mean, obviously, I mean, this was on primetime TV, and they were, you know, advertising this ultimate herbicide. And it was the, you know, bee's knees, and that'll
TV
solve all your problems.
Isn't always right, is it?
So, So anyway, what are some other ways that you can think of that we can control, let's not call it a weed, shall we? So undesirable, like plants that we don't want to maybe take over a particular...
Well, Karen, I have here with me some booklets, and they're called Plant Me Instead. And they talk about weeds, but they call them pest plants.
Mm-hmm.
And these publications are published by the council, or the Auckland Regional Council.
Oh, really?
You can access them, like, if you go to the library, and there's always a council stand somewhere in the library with all these council leaflets and pamphlets.
Yeah.
You'll probably find a couple of these booklets on that stand.
Okay.
So this is how to
free.
Help.
Great.
Yeah, for free. And you can identify which plants are the pest plants for the Auckland region.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm finding these booklets really useful because, they give you a picture of the weed and its name.
Mm-hmm.
And then they also tell you how to get rid of it and why it is a pest plant.
Mm-hmm.
And then also underneath them they've got suggested alternative plants that you can plant instead of that weed.
And please tell me they're not saying just spray everything. Have they got, like, alternative methods?
Yes, they have.
what do you call them? Pest plant removal.
Yeah. So it gives you some instructions on control methods, it says. So there's, like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different control methods that they recommend.
Oh, that's cool.
And they're different for each plant because each plant grows differently.
Yeah.
So one is physical control.
Yes.
So you just cut the branches, or the stems and the branches off and make sure that the plant doesn't produce seeds. So you can just cut it.
Yeah. You just keep it trimmed back.
Yeah. The second is also physical control, but B, and that's where you cut it down, right down to the stump, and then you might apply some poison to the stump so that it doesn't grow back.
Okay.
So these are like for weeds that are like trees and things, not like your little
Well, just
ones.
Out of interest, Selena, what were some of the pest plants that the council, I don't want to use the word recommended, but say, what are, I could think of a few offhand.
Okay, there's a
What
huge
should we be
list.
Looking out for? Give us just a couple there. I can think of the ginger plant. I've got one, and my neighbour's got a lovely one growing right in the back of her yard.
Okay, we've got your ginger.
Yeah. For those listeners that are not sure, that one looks like it's got big sort of leaves. What do you call those kind of leaves? It's almost like a
they're kind
pond.
Of like banana leaves, but they're huge.
Big leaves and a spiky sort of orange flower that's quite large.
Yeah.
Can grow up to about maybe 10 centimetres long.
Yeah.
So that's that one she's talking about there. Yeah, what does it say about that one?
You want me to have a look and see what it says about the ginger?
If you want.
Did you mean?
I can always go to the library and find out for myself.
Oh, we'll just name a few plants and to start off with, and then we can talk about more.
Yeah.
Okay. So we've got your yellow and Kalil ginger, it says, the Hedychium species. That's quite a common one in the bush.
Okay.
And it is a garden escapee, so it was originally grown as an ornamental, but then it got out into the bush and then it started taking over.
And so what was that? Was that a creep? Was it a creeper? No, what is it?
It's actually according to this booklet, it's a ground cover or a filler.
Okay.
But because it grows by rhizomes, and people just have been chucking the rhizomes into the bush, and then they just grow
Easy. Yeah, rhizomes take off quite easily, don't they?
Yeah.
Do you just want to let the listeners know what they're to look for? What a rhizome?
It's the kind of the root of that plant.
Yeah, and, they, and
it's got
forms,
fleshy roots.
Yeah, and then it just, you can, even if you're just throwing it away, it will quite often just take.
Yeah, and it'll sprout again.
Yeah, quite easily. So, and they're, yeah, they're white.
What you need to do is to get rid of the whole thing and not let it anywhere near any soil because it will just sprout again.
Right.
So you could burn it.
Or chuck it in the rubbish. Is that
the
recommended?
Landfill.
I will admit there's plants that I don't want to grow prolifically in my garden, and I'll throw them in my rubbish bin just because it's just
because you don't want them in your compost.
Yeah,
yeah. Otherwise, yeah, they'll just resprout. So that's one quite a common one. I didn't have that one in my garden.
No, I haven't.
But,
come across that.
A lot of people do if they live in the bush. Tradescantia or wandering Jew. That's one that's quite common as a ground cover. Originally started as a wonderful hanging basket plant, but it escaped and then, you know, it started growing everywhere and it smothers all the native.
Is that got a colour to it that?
It's green.
Okay.
But you can get purple versions, which are not the weedy type.
I think that my mum just gave me a purple version of it as a gift.
That one seems to be okay. It's a green one. That's the problem.
Yeah, and the wandering Jew has a violet flower, doesn't it?
Well, in this picture, it's got white.
Oh, okay.
But,
I might be thinking of Old Man's Beard.
So, Tradescantia, as they call it, or wandering Jew.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with that, it is mother. It spreads and spreads and spreads.
Mm.
And you can't just chuck it out because it'll grow again from, fragments of the stem.
Yeah. So it's all these kind of tough survivors, really, isn't it? If you just carelessly throw them to the side, they'll just be like, whoop. Not a problem.
Yeah. And another thing about Tradescantia is it can... It says here it can cause contact dermatitis in dogs.
Oh, okay.
So it's quite toxic to them.
Yeah.
But apparently people have said that chickens love to eat it and it doesn't cause any problems for them.
Okay.
So if you have chickens, they could control your...
And that's where I mentioned in my introduction about how some weeds can interfere with the animals.
Yes.
Especially if you've got livestock, there's certain plants that are just not good to have in your... In your grass, in your pastures.
Well, because animals could get sick when they eat them.
Well, yeah, even things like I remember barley grass being a big problem on back in my childhood days. My dad would get us to go out and fill up sacks of with this barley grass, which is because what happens is when the barley seeds, it's got that sharp kind of seed head, and it would get stuck in the sheep wool and then cause... irritation problems, and then also the quality of the wool. So if it got shorn, you don't get the price you for sort of tainted.
Aww.
So there was a number of reasons there. So we would be out there, $2 a sack, it'd have us. So little things like that, you sort of learn through, life, I suppose.
Okay.
Just getting in amongst it.
The thing with these kinds of weeds is that all seem to be garden escapees. Like they were originally really loved garden plants. Mm. Actually sold in garden centres as ornamentals.
Mm.
But they got out into the bush or the farm and caused a nuisance because they're not crop plants, they're not useful for them. So actually... Yeah, it is a sort of in the eye of the beholder because some of these plants are actually beautiful.
Yeah.
But it's just they spread so much, they're self-seeding and then you can't get rid of them.
When they start getting out of control in places that you don't want them, there's some really interesting stories to be found online, or I guess in a library. Sorry, Selena, there's other options. Yeah. They're the librarian here. But I found a really interesting story moving away from the natives about Australia with ryegrass. Have you heard of that drama that happened over there with the ryegrass?
No.
I'll read it to you. It's so interesting. And this sort of, now I'm all kind of like making it out like I'm anti-weeds, but I can see where it's come from, this attitude that we've got. It sort of came about through herbicide resistance, which is when plants become resistant to the sprays.
Mm-hmm.
And in the 1970s, Australian sheep farmers switched to exclusively growing wheat in their pastures. And in the wheat fields, they introduced varieties of ryegrass, which was great for grazing sheep. But the only problem was that, so in amongst the wheat fields, you had your sheep quite often, you know, if you're farming, you'll have several different things happening on okay. your farm. But the problem was that the ryegrass became a huge competitor with the wheat. And then, so because it produces a huge amount of seeds, and then if left unchecked, it can completely choke a field. So this is where they started using herbicides quite prolifically, because they provided excellent control, and they weren't disrupting the soil through ploughing and hoeing and trimming back like you suggested, you know, one of the suggestions in that booklet there. But after a while, the ryegrass and some other weeds, they began to develop a resistance, and so they had to find new techniques. So what they started doing was, in 1983, patches of ryegrass had become immune to this herbicide that they were applying prolifically called hoegrass, a family of herbicides. And they inhibit an enzyme called acetyl coenzyme A carboxylate. That's just the technique that the herbicide, it goes for, So all the science in the herbicide there. Anyway, so the ryegrass populations were large and had substantial genetic diversity, because the farmers had planted lots of varieties, because that's what often they'll do. Grass is like a big business. And, you know, you've got cross-pollination by wind, so the genes were shuffling frequently. It was a mess. So they started spraying this inexpensive hoegrass herbicide year after year, and they were even diluting the herbicide in order to save the money. But that just increased the plant survival. It became more resistant. And so basically, in 2013, they've been only left with two herbicide classes. There's hundreds of herbicides out there now, I think. But there's only two that work on this particular ryegrass now. But that just shows you how it impacted the Australian economy and everything big time. The whole wheat industry was like in dire crisis because of this so-called plant in the wrong place.
Why didn't they just get the sheep to eat it?
Because they'll eat the wheat as well, I guess.
If the sheep are eating the ryegrass, you'll have more like sheep meat or wool because they're eating the ryegrass.
But then they won't have bread.
Well, they can plant the wheat somewhere else ryegrass isn't.
Yeah, but the thing is, it was just so, this ryegrass has heaps of seeds in it and it ends up just blowing all over the place.
Okay.
I just thought it was a really interesting story just to show our listeners out there how things can get out of control. But interestingly, there's been new, I did a bit of research, or just a bit, quite a lot, as you can tell. But they've found new techniques. Basically, the only way that you can fix problems with like invasive weeds is to basically burn them.
Okay, burn the whole field.
What they've come up the best way, rather than just spraying the heck out of it, and you can't do that all the time because people are getting cancer. Also these plants are clever and they end up building resistance to it anyway. So it's like just defeats the purpose. It's costly. So one of the techniques they've come up with is when they combine harvest the wheat, they've got these special things that collect all the chaff off the grasses and bits that are not, you know, from the actual crop. And it's been engineered. I guess we can thank our clever engineers for this. And they collect them all and condense them and then burn them.
Okay.
So that they don't. So they're working with the ryegrass. Okay, look, this is going to be a battle.
Right. Are they making biochar out of it?
Oh, maybe.
Just complete
maybe,
the cycle.
Totally, yeah.
And get it back to the soil. I mean,
so I thought that was really cool to read that we've sort of outsmarted it in that way.
Okay.
It's sort of more of an organic weed control.
Right, okay.
Did you want to talk about some other organic weed controls while we're on that topic?
I'm just go through what the Weed Busters were recommending.
What do they have any, what do they recommend in that, with regards to that topic?
Yeah, physical control. So they've got three types of physical control, as in cutting it and then cutting and pasting it, or they're taking out the whole plant, weed, root and all. Mm-hmm. So that's three, just weeding it by, you know, digging it out.
Yeah.
And then they say
manually.
chemical control, but that's obviously not organic. But, mm-hmm. And then they've got biological control, mm-hmm. which seems to be that some animals or insects will eat that plant.
Yes, I touched on that too. Massive topic.
But then, you know, with the ryegrass, yeah, I was thinking, why don't the sheep just eat the ryegrass? It is food for them. And, maybe.
And they do, but the problem was it was spreading into the wrong fields.
But with fields, it's like, this is man-made, you know, plants go where they want to go, right? They're not thinking, oh, I will just not stay out of this plot of land just because that owner doesn't want me to.
Exactly. Exactly. So I really like the idea of just working with it and just basically not trying to eradicate all the grass. Just accept that, hey, it's a part of life. It's one of those things. We just need to work. Back in one of the other things I discovered on the weeding was there's a few countries out there that are still manually, like a lot of the suggestions in that Weed Busters manual. Mm. But in India, there's still a lot of cultivation. They just manually hoe back the weeds or pull them out with just teams of people just working in that hot sun. But, I mean, sometimes they're making a living if they're happy doing that, if the working conditions are, okay, then I'm fine with that. But at some point with, like, gardening, there has to be that. There's no real easy way around.
You've got to weed anyway, and you can use the weeds for biomass in your compost as long as it's not the seed heads or the root fragments.
Yeah.
The pest, the super resilient ones.
Yeah. So that's what you've been doing lately. We were having this chat the other day, weren't we? Was it at the community garden or somewhere? But you were saying how, and I've started doing this technique as well, whereby you just pull out the weed manually and chop it up or rip it up or whatever. Well, not even. I just throw it
back on the... And if you're worried about the roots and the seeds, just drown it in water and you can make weed tea and that will stop it regrowing. But you'll use the nutrients that the weed has pulled out of the ground back to your plants.
Yeah.
So, there are ways that weeds can be useful, and also they cover the ground so that your soil doesn't get washed away. They're good for that.
And also as a mulch.
Yes, mulch.
So giving it that protection. Yeah.
So one of the methods that wasn't mentioned in this booklet is mulching.
Mm.
And mulching basically means just cover the ground, smother the weeds so they don't grow. Just make sure the mulch is organic and so it maybe pile it on quite thickly.
Mm.
And so the lack of light means that less chance for the weeds photosynthesize and grow.
Yeah.
So that's another method.
This is a whole nother topic, and thank goodness for that, because, you know, there's so much to talk about, listeners, like with regards how to manage your garden, you know, as best you can. And as we're big, as you can tell, organic gardeners. I've just seen too much, and it's really strange because I grew up with planes flying overhead, dropping, you know.
Who knows what,
you know, because that's how things were done, and that's, you know, how we made a living. But when you see all the negatives.
Cancers.
It's just like, you know.
Is it worth it?
I don't believe so, but clearly a lot of people still do.
I was reading this book called The War on Invasive Species, I think that's the title, and it had a really interesting perspective of why why we call them invasive species when they're really just plants that really want to grow, quite suited to where they want to grow, and they are providing an ecological benefit that maybe we can't see or people aren't aware of. And they are contributing to the biodiversity of that particular place. Because, like, if we totally restricted the forest and our environment to only natives and just totally removed every non-native in New Zealand, we wouldn't have vegetables. We wouldn't have flowers.
But that's a whole nother... We're talking ecosystems and the whole thing there. Maybe we are actually just meant to be hunters and gatherers. Maybe the whole concept of gardening, or as big a thing as what we've made it now, or horticulture, agriculture, was never really the meant to be taken as far as it has, you know?
I think with the Native Indians, as I was also reading about them, is that people thought, well, the white American settlers thought that they weren't actually looking after the land, that they weren't actually doing anything.
Mm.
But they were actually managing their forests and prairies and things by burning, by controlled burning, and harvesting what was growing in the land, but not like farming it like the white people were.
Yeah.
It's a totally different sort of philosophy of growing food and harvesting and foraging and everything.
That's right.
And so they were actually looking after it, but didn't look like they were looking after it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it wasn't all in straight lines. It wasn't all, you know, totally obvious.
Yeah.
So
it's very interesting. And even the whole concept of, like, those people probably didn't even compost.
They probably just chucked it on the ground and it...
I've read a really interesting article. It's something I'd like to share with the listeners on another occasion. It's called Cut Out the Middle Man, and that's the compost bin.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. So that's for another day, guys. But it's a big topic.
Sometimes I think we make more work for ourselves.
Yeah, yeah. That's right.
So, Karen, do you have any advice on how to lessen the load of weeding?
Well, there was two little points I wanted to, just before we finish up, Selena. Crop rotation was one. So I really like this one. Rotating crops with ones that kill weeds by choking them out. Love the idea of crop rotation, because that's a whole other topic. But it's a really good organic practice and to do.
Excellent.
But using a crop such as hemp can be a very effective method of weed control. Reason being is that it basically will choke out all those kind of creeping weeds and ones that tend to be invasive.
Oh, right.
Yes. And then you just chop it down and use it. You can use hemp for a whole
lot. Oh, wow.
Yeah, a lot of things.
That's a good one.
That was a good one. And the other one was just simple animal grazing. Companies are now using goats in Western America to control and eradicate leafy spurge and knapweed and other toxic weeds. So obviously goats must have a bit of a robust constitution
weeds.
There.
Yeah.
So I didn't realise that. So they're using the good old humble goat. And then at the end of the day, you know, you can get a bit of a goat curry out of it.
Excellent.
So that's really clever thinking, and I like the way it's going. And I'm going to leave it at that for today. I think I've said enough. Yeah. So next week we are going to discuss, we will definitely do Plant of the Week next week, guys. Sorry, we've run out of time. And we'll let you know what that will be next week. It's a bit of a surprise.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Happy weeding.
Bye.
Bye.
Put up a parking lot with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? It's a paradise. Put up a parking lot.
Ooh, bah, 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 bah. Ooh, bah, 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 bah.
They took all the trees, put them in a tree museum. Charge the people $1.50 just to see them. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paved paradise, put up a parking lot.
Well, thanks for listening, everyone. That's all we have time for. Come back next week for more great gardening tips at Garden Planet. You can find us on Facebook on our Garden Planet Facebook page, or email us at gardenplanetfm@gmail.com if you want to ask us anything about gardening. Happy gardening, everyone, and we'll be back next week.